Sister Cherna crumpled in a heap, her hands tearing at her throat as she struggled to get air. She couldn't get her breath. Jagang had crushed her windpipe. Her fingers clawed at the air. As she lay at his feet, she began turning blue. With desperate effort, she struggled her way into Anne's lap. Anne stroked the poor, ruined woman's head with an outpouring of helpless compassion. Anne whispered her love and forgiveness to Sister Cherna, and then silently prayed to the Creator and to the good spirits. Sister Cherna's arms, twitching in agony, circled Anne's waist in gratitude. Anne could do nothing but pray that the Creator would forgive his child as she died a burbling death in Anne's lap. At last, she stilled with a merciful release of death. Jagang kicked Sister Cherna aside. He seized the chain around Anne's throat and, with one hand, easily hauled her to her feet. Cloudy shapes in his inky eyes shifted in a way that unsettled her stomach.
"I think you may be of some use.
Maybe I can pull off your arms and send them to Richard Rawl just to give him nightmares. Maybe I can trade you for something of value, but fear not. I will think of a use for you, prelate. You are now my property."
"You can have my existence in this world," Anne said with grim commitment, "but you cannot touch my soul. That gift of the Creator is mine and mine alone."
He laughed. "A fine speech." He jerked her face closer. "One I've heard before." His eyebrows arched with delight.
"Why, I think every woman in this room has said the same to me. But you know what, prelate? They put the lie to it today, didn't they? They all gave you over when they could have escaped. At the least, they could have saved your life at no risk to themselves, but they chose to remain slaves when you offered them freedom. I'd say, prelate, that I have their souls, too."
"Sister Cherna sought me at death, not you, Jagang. She sought goodness and love, even though she had betrayed me. That, Emperor, is the mark of a soul's true intent."
"A difference of opinion, then." He shrugged.
"What say we kill the rest one at a time and see each vote of devotion, then tally the votes at the end? To be fair, though, we'll take turns killing them. I killed mine. Your turn."
Anne could do no more than glare at the beast. He let out a belly laugh.
"No. See, you aren't so confident in winning the votes of your sister's souls."
He turned to the sisters, still on their knees. "Fortune for you today, darlings. The prelate seems to have seeded your souls."
The dark gaze returned to Anne.
"By the way, you are probably hoping the chimes will be banished. We share the hope. I have use for magic, but if I have to, I can certainly win this way, too. But if the chimes are banished, it will do you no good. You see, those manacles and chains are invested with a spell spun by my other sisters. You know the ones, the Sisters of the Dark. As you know, they have use of subtractive magic, and that, my dear prelate, still works. I just didn't want you to suffer with false hope."
"How considerate of you."
"Don't fret, though. I will think of some creative use for you."
He cocked his arm. His bare shoulders bulged from the fur vest. His biceps were bigger than the waist of many women in the room.
"For now, though, I think I'd like you unconscious."
She tried to pull power forth. Her gift did not respond. Anne watched the fist coming, but could do nothing to stop it.
Chapter 46.
Zed scratched his chin as he looked around. He didn't see anyone. It was a peculiar alleyway, narrow and dark. He peered down to the little place at the end. The gloomy residence looked deserted. That was a good sign. Zed stroked Spider's nose.
"You wait here, understand? Wait here for me."
The horse tossed her head and nickered agreeably. Smiling, Zed scratched her ear. In response, she pressed her forehead against his chest, holding it there to let him know she would be well pleased if he were to want to continue scratching the ear for the rest of the afternoon. Named after the unsettling leggy black splotch on her creamy rump, Spider had proven an excellent purchase, despite the high price. Being young, strong, and brimming with equine enthusiasm, the horse enjoyed trotting and occasionally spirited runs. She had gotten him to Toskla in remarkably good time. Since he had arrived, he had learned that Toskla was now called Andurith. In fact, he had almost been hauled off his horse by a man who accused Zed of using the old name as an affront. Fortunately, Spider knew nothing of the peculiar human sensitivity to mere words. She was happy to leap into a gallop. Zed, without use of the gift and being vulnerable, besides feeling his age, had been resigned to a long and arduous journey afoot across the wilds. But by the magic of luck, on his third day out of the Mud People's village, he ran across a man who turned out to be an agent in trade agreements. Since he frequently went back and forth between clients, the man traveled with several horses. He could afford to be without his extra until he reached his destination, especially at the price Zed offered, and so had parted with Spider. The formidable journey Zed anticipated ended up being remarkably short and not at all unpleasant, as long as he didn't dwell on his reasons for traveling to Andurith. Mingling into line at the frontier, Zed had been allowed through the checkpoint along with wagons, merchants, and traders of every sort. Dressed as he was in his fine maroon and black robes with silver brocade cuffs and gold brocade around the neck and down the front, along with a gold buckle on a red satin belt, he was easily able to pass himself off as a merchant. He told the officers at the border that he had fruit orchards to the north and was on his way to Fairfield in order to negotiate trade agreements. By the look of the soldiers he saw at the border, the people of Andurith placed too much faith in the Dominie Dirch. It had been a long time since he had been to the land formerly called Toskla, but back then the border had been defended by as formidable and well-trained an army as there was. The army had deteriorated, until now it was nothing more than the hollow deterrent of ignorant confidence. Zed noticed Spider's ears turned toward the empty-looking home down at the end of the alleyway. Every muscle in the horse was at full attention. Zed guessed that perhaps a horse was as good at certain things as some of his magic might have been. He found the thought disagreeable. He wanted his magic back. After giving Spider a pat of reassurance, and once again asking her to wait there, Zed made his way down the narrow alleyway. Tall, clapboard walls to each side kept out most of the light. Nevertheless, a wide variety of herbs grew beside the narrow footpath. Many of the herbs Zed saw growing there didn't enjoy the light at all. Some of them were exceedingly rare. They ordinarily hissed at light, but now they looked sickly. Zed made sure to step on each of the three steps going up to the door, rather than skip any. Such perfunctory attempts at stealth would be a mistake if this was the place he hoped it was. Glancing in the gap of the curtains, he could see it was dark inside. He didn't see any eyes evaluating him, but he strongly suspected, if not with the aid of magic, then with common sense, that they were there. He took one last look over his shoulder at Spider standing attentively, her ears pricked toward him. She lifted her head, opened her mouth, and neighed. Zed reached up and knocked. The door creaked as it opened. No one was behind it. "Enter," came a voice from the shadows beyond, "and state your request." Zed stepped into the gloom of the narrow room. Little light came in the gap between the heavy curtains, and the light from the door died out before daring to trespass very far. He could see no furniture, only the floorboards, stretching off into the dim distance where she remained. He turned and peered up at the top of the door. He pointed a bony finger at it. "Nice touch. The rope used to open the door while you stay over there. Very effective." "Who are you to tempt my anger?" "Tempt your anger? Oh, dear, no. You have it all wrong. I'm here looking for a sorceress." "Take care, stranger, with what you wish. Wishes have an unpleasant manner of sometimes coming to be. State your name." Zed bowed dramatically. "Zedekus Zul Zorander." He cocked his head to regard with one eye the woman in the shadows. "That would be Zedekus Zul Zorander, as in First Wizard Zedekus Zul Zorander." The woman staggered into the light, her fair features set in astonishment. "First Wizard." Zed put on a disarming smile. "Franka Gowanlock, I'm hoping?" Slack-jawed and wide-eyed, she seemed only able to nod. "My, my, but haven't you grown?" Zed held his hand out below his belt line. "You couldn't have been any bigger than this when I last saw you." He smiled with sincere admiration. "You look to have grown into a very lovely woman." She blushed as she reached up to plump her hair. "Why, I have gray hair." "The bloom of it becomes you. It truly does." He meant it. She really was an attractive woman. Her nearly shoulder-length hair swept back to display proud features in a most appealing manner. The kiss of gray at her temples only enhanced her mature beauty.
And you?
Yes,
he said with a sigh.
I know. I'm not exactly sure what it was that it happened, but I've grown into an old man.
A grin growing on her face, she stepped up and curtsied, holding on to the skirts of her simple brown dress as she dipped.
I am honored to have you in my humble home, First Wizard.
Zed waggled a hand.
None of that now. We're old acquaintances. Just Zed would do fine by me.
She rose.
Zed, then. I can hardly believe the Creator has answered my prayer in so direct a manner. Oh, but how I wish my mother were still alive to see you again. She, too, was a lovely woman. May the good spirits watch over her kind soul.
Beaming, Franka took his face in both hands.
And you are as handsome as I remember.
Really?
Zed straightened his shoulders.
Why, thank you, Franka. I try to take care of myself, wash regularly and such, with a few herbs and special oils I occasionally add in the water. I think that accounts for my skin still being so supple.
Oh, Zed, you can't imagine how happy I am to see you. Thank the Creator.
She was still holding his face in her hands. Her eyes welled with tears.
I need help. Oh, First Wizard, I so desperately need your help.
He took her hands in his.
Odd, you should mention that. Zed, you helped my mother once. Now you must help me, please. My power has failed. I've tried everything I can think of. I've consulted books of charms, spells, and bewitching. None of them have been any help. I've had to tie that rope atop the door to fool people and keep them wary. I've been worried sick. I've hardly slept. I've tried. The chimes are loose.
Her lashes fluttered as she stared dumbly at him. Her silent home seemed to stretch with her, to turn an ear toward him with her, to hold its breath with her.
What did you say? The chimes are loose.
No,
she said, appearing to be in a state of confused shock.
I don't think that's it. I think it may be a heating of my blood, possibly caused by a hex placed on me by women of lesser talent but greater ambition. A jealousy, I believe it to be, along with a vengeful nature. I try not to step on people's toes, as it were, but there have been times.
Zed grasped her shoulders.
Franka, I came here because I'm hoping you can help me. The mother, my granddaughter-in-law, unintentionally set the chimes free while urgently summoning the aid of powerful magic in a final recourse to save the life of my grandson. I need your help. That's why I've come. My gift, too, has failed. All magic is failing. The world of life is in terrible danger. I don't need to explain to a woman of your talents the consequences of such an event. We need to see if there is anything we can do to banish the chimes. As First Wizard, I've come to call upon you for help. Your grandson, is he... Did he survive the ordeal? Did he recover?
Yes.
Fortunately, with the aid of the woman, then to be his wife, he survived and is now well.
She put a fingernail between her teeth for a moment, her dark-eyed gaze shifting about as she considered his words.
There is that much good in it, then, that he survived. But then, in return for their help, that would mean the chimes could cross the veil.
Her brow puckered.
Your grandson, you say? Has he the gift?
A thousand things at once flashed through Zed's mind. He answered with a simple,
Yes.
Franka smiled briefly and politely to show she was pleased for Zed, and then moved into action. She threw back the drapes, took hold of his arm, and steered him to a table at the rear. She opened a heavy drape over a little window in the back to let light flood across the table. The dark mahogany tabletop had a grace inlaid in silver. Franka graciously gestured for him to sit. While he did, she retrieved two cups. After pouring tea from a pot hung over the glowing embers in the hearth, she set one before him and then sank into a chair across from him. She dithered before saying,
I suspect there must be more to it.
Zed sighed.
There is a great deal more, but time is running short.
Mind hitting a few of the high spots for me?
Well, all right then.
Zed took a sip of tea first.
Do you recall Dahara?
Her hand with the teacup paused on its way to her lips.
And how could one not recall Dahara?
Yes. Well, the thing is, my daughter was Richard's... That's my grandson, Richard. And my daughter was Richard's mother. He was fathered through a cruel act of rape.
Oh, I'm so sorry, she said with sincere sympathy. But what does that have to do with Dahara?
The man who fathered him was Darkin Rawl of Dahara.
Her hands took on a decided tremble. She had not yet managed to get the tea to her mouth. With care, Franca set down her full cup, lest she spill her tea before ever tasting it.
Do you mean to tell me that this grandson of yours is the progeny of two lines of wizards, and is the very same Lord Rawl demanding the surrender of all lands of the Midlands?
Well, yes, that would be him.
And that this grandson of yours, the Lord Rawl himself, is the same one who is going to be wedded to the Mother Confessor herself?
It was a lovely ceremony, Zed said.
Quite lovely. Rather exclusive, it was, but still stylish.
Franca put her forehead in her hand.
Dear spirits, that is a lump to swallow.
Oh, yes. He's also a war wizard. I forgot. Sorry. He was born with both sides of the gift.
Her head came up.
What?
You know, both sides. Subtractive magic as well as the usual additive. Both sides.
I know what both sides means.
Oh.
Franca swallowed.
Wait just a minute. The chimes. You mean it was the Mother Confessor who called them?
Well, she...
The woman rose in a rush, her chair scraping against the floor.
It's Lord Rawl who...
Dear spirits, the Mother Confessor herself pledged the soul of Lord Rawl, a war wizard with both sides of the gift, to the chimes?
It's not as bad as all that. She had no knowledge of the spell. She didn't do it intentionally. She's a good person and would never deliberately do such a thing.
Deliberate or not, if the chimes get a hold of him...
I've sent them both off to a safe place, to where the chimes can't get to him. We have no need fear that part of it.
She sighed with relief.
Thank the Creator for that much.
Zed took another sip.
But that still leaves us without our power, and the world without magic, and possibly on the brink of ruin. Like I said, I need some help.
Franca finally sank back into her chair when Zed nodded toward it. He smiled and told her the tea was excellent, and that she should have some herself.
Zed, I think you need the Creator himself to come help you.
What do you think I can possibly do? I'm just an obscure, middling, unremarkable sorceress in a far-flung land. Why would you come to me?
Zed squinted. He pointed.
What are you hiding with that neckband?
Her fingers brushed her throat.
A scar.
You remember the Blood of the Fold? Zed nodded that he did.
Well, most every place has men like that. Men who hate magic. Men who think those with magic are responsible for every miserable thing that happens in their lives.
Yes, every place has its zealots.
Here, zealotry went by the name Saren Rajak. He's the usual type, vicious and vengeful. He's talented at expressing his delusions in a way that whips up the emotions of others and pulls them into his wicked ways.
So, his idea of ridding the world of evil was killing you.
Me and those like me.
She briefly pulled down the neckband to reveal a scar. He hanged me by my neck while he and his followers started to build a fire under me. He's rather fond of burning. Thinks it purges the world of the person's magic, keeps it from lingering after death. Zed sighed.
It never ends.
So apparently you convinced him to leave you be.
She smiled. Cost him an eye, what he did to me.
Can't say I blame you.
It was a long time ago.
Zed sought to change the subject.
I presume you've heard about the war with the Old World.
Of course. We've had representatives from the Imperial Order here to discuss the matter with our people.
Zed sat up straighter.
What? The Order has people here.
That's what I'm telling you. Certain people in the government listen closely to what the Imperial Order has to say. I fear the Order is making offers to high officials, and has been doing so for quite some time.
She watched him over the rim of her cup as she took a sip. She seemed to decide to tell him more.
Some people have been considering sending a secret message to the Mother Confessor to ask that she come and investigate.
With the chimes loose, she will be without her power, the same as you and I. Until the chimes are banished, she can be no help with anything like that.
Franca sighed.
Yes, I see what you mean. It would be best if we could see the chimes banished.
In the meantime, perhaps people here should investigate the matter.
She set down her cup. Who is going to question the Minister of Culture's office?
The directors?
Zed offered. She turned her cup around and around on the tabletop. Maybe, was all she said. When Zed didn't say anything, she sought to fill the silence. In Andrith, you do what you must to get along.
There are always those who will, Zed slouched back in his chair. It will end up being irrelevant anyway. Andrith is going to have to surrender to Richard and the new Daharan Empire he is gathering to resist the invasion of the Imperial Order.
Zed took another sip.
Did I mention he is also the Seeker of Truth?
Franca looked up.
No, you neglected to mention it. Richard won't allow Andrith to carry on in the manner they seem to be doing, to have corrupt officials colluding with the Order. He and the Mother Confessor will put an end to such dangerous clandestine scheming. That's one of the reasons he's been forced to seize power. He means to consolidate rule under fair and open law.
Fair law, she mused, as if it were a child's wish. We are a prosperous land, Zed. Anders have a good life. If it were the Hakens listening to the Imperial Order, I could understand it. They could be said to have cause. But Anders are the ones listening, and they are the ones already with power. Zed contemplated his tea.
Nothing nettles some people more than other people being free. In much the same way that Saren Rajak fellow hates those who have magic, the ruling elite, or those who would be, despise freedom. They find joy only in perpetuating misery.
Zed sought to take the frost off the chill subject.
So, Franca, do you have a husband, or do the handsome men of the world still have a chance to court you?
Franca smiled to herself for a time before she spoke.
My heart belongs to someone.
Zed reached across the table and patted her hand.
Good for you.
She shook her head as her smile ghosted away.
No, he's married. I can't allow my feelings to be known.
I would forever hate myself if I gave him any reason to decide to leave his beautiful bride and take up instead an aging spinster like me. I dare not let him even guess my feelings.
I'm sorry, Franca, he said in gentle sympathy. Life, or should I say love, sometimes seems so unfair. At least it may seem so now. But someday,
Franca dismissed the matter with a gesture, more for herself than for him, he thought. She met his gaze again.
Zed, I'm flattered you would come to me, for that matter that you would even remember my name. But why would you think I can help you? You have more power than I, or at least you did. To be quite honest, I didn't come for the purpose of seeking your help in the way you might think. I came here because, as a young wizard, I learned this to be the place where the Chines were entombed, in Toskla, or Andorith, as it's now called.
Really? I never knew that. Where in Andorith are they entombed?
Zed spread his hands. I was hoping you might know. You were the only name I knew from here, so I came seeking you out. I need help.
I'm sorry, Zed, but I had no idea the Chines were entombed here. She again took up her cup and sipped in thought.
However, if, as you say, the Chines can't get the soul of your grandson, they might eventually be pulled back into the world of the dead. We might need do nothing to bring it about. The whole problem might just vanish.
Yes, there is that hope. But you must keep in mind the nature of the underworld.
Meaning?
Zed tapped the outer circle of the grace inlaid on the tabletop.
Here begins the underworld, where life crosses over.
He glided his hand past the table's edge.
Beyond is eternity. Because the underworld is eternal, time has no meaning. There may be beginning when we cross over, but there is no end. So the concept of time unravels there. It is only here in the world of life where time is defined by beginning and end, giving it some reference points, that it has significance. The Chines were conjured from that timeless place beyond and derived their power from there. So time is meaningless to them. Perhaps it's true that without obtaining the soul they crossed over to help, they will be pulled back to the underworld. However, to timeless beings, their time here may be viewed by them as but an instant as they wait to see if they will succeed, or as they enjoy a bit of frolic at bringing death and destruction, except that instant to them could be a millennium to this world. It could be 10 millennia and still be but a meaningless twinkle in time to them, especially since they have no souls and can't really experience life.
She had been hanging on every word, seeming to be starved for a conversation of things few but the gifted could comprehend.
Yes, I see your point.
She raised a finger.
But by the same token, they could be gone today, vanish as we speak, feeling endless frustration in a world with time, once they begin to find they must function within the alien confines of time and a schedule. The soul they seek, after all, has only so much time in this world. They must pursue and capture his soul while he lives.
Well put, and a worthy consideration. But how long shall we wait? At some point, it will be too late for things of magic to recover. Some surely now lie ailing with the fading of magic. How long until they die out forever? I see your stargazers wilting out on the path to your home.
Zed lifted an eyebrow.
But much worse. How long until magic such as that of the gambit moth fails? What if the crops now growing are soon tainted?
Her face, creased with concern, turned away. Not knowing her well, Zed didn't bring it up, but without magic, Jigang and the Imperial Order were only that much more powerful. Without magic to aid them, many more would die fighting him, and it very well could be blood spilled to no good end.
Franka, as guardians of the Veil, protectors of helpless creatures of magic, and as stewards of magic's promise to mankind, we must act with all due haste. We know not where the line lies that makes meaningful aid too late.
She nodded thoughtfully.
Yes. Yes, you are right, of course. Why do you need to know where the chimes are entombed? What will that help you accomplish?
Their ancient banishment, in order to nullify the original conjuring that brought them here, would have by necessity had to again breach the veil. Such a counterspell would itself have had to be balanced with an ancillary spell to allow their return to the world of life. Such a return spell could have been exceedingly narrow in terms, invocation of threes and all that, but it wouldn't matter. The mere existence of a return mechanism was all the balance the banishment spell would have required.
Zed slowly ran his finger around the rim of his teacup.
From what I know of the matter, I believe the nature of their existence dictates that the chimes can only return to the world of life once the narrow requirements of the balancing mechanism are met, through the gateway of their banishment. That's why I've had to come here.
She stared off in reflection.
Yes, that makes sense.
The gateway, wherever it is, would be open.
Being as you don't know where the chimes are entombed, perhaps you could be my guide.
Her gaze came back to him. Where could we look? Do you have in mind a place to start? After another sip, Zed set down his cup.
My idea was you might be able to help me get into the library.
The Library of Culture? At the Minister of Culture's estate?
That's the one. They have ancient texts there. At least they used to. Since the chimes were banished here in Andorath, the library might contain records or other information so I could find where it took place, and thus the gateway. They might even have other information of use.
What are the names of the books you seek? Perhaps I know them.
I don't know what books might be of help, if such books even exist, or if they do, that they are here. I will just have to start looking through those volumes in the library and see what we can find.
She leaned forward.
Zed, there are thousands of books there.
I know, I've seen them before.
And if you find a book that names this place, then what?
Zed shrugged in a deliberately vague manner.
First step first.
If he could find no information on the mechanism of their banishment, he had an idea of what he might have to do should he be able to find the location of the entombment. Even if he did find such information, and it was a simple matter, without the use of his magic, he would be helpless to reverse the problem. He might be forced to take desperate measures.
So, what about the Library of Culture? Can I get in there?
I think I could help with that much of it. As an Ander and one known at the Minister's estate, I'm trusted with access. Not everyone is. Those in authority have been altering history to such an extent that those of us who have lived a bit of it don't even recognize our own past, much less trust the rest of what we're told. She emerged from her private thoughts and straightened with a brave smile.
When do you wish to go there?
The sooner the better.
You think you could pretend to be a visiting scholar?
I think I could manage to look like I have difficulty recalling my own name.
Chapter 47.
Oh, how kind!
Zed exclaimed in mock delight, as the woman set down the heavy volume in the glow from the tall lamp.
I'm sure of it now, I've no doubt. You can be nothing other than a good spirit come to assist me, Mistress Firkin.
The woman abruptly turned as shy as a teenage girl. Her cheeks reddened as she smiled.
It's my job, Master Ribnik.
He leaned closer to her and lowered his voice to a playful whisper.
I prefer beautiful women call me Reuben.
Zed, when circumstances required the use of an assumed name, favored the name Reuben Ribnik. He thought it a dashing name. Leading a simple life fostered the urge for occasional flamboyance. Zed considered lighthearted diversion essential to balance. Something as simple as using the name Reuben Ribnik satisfied that need. The woman blinked, not catching on to the flirtation. Surprising, he thought, considering she was nice enough looking that she would have to have had ardent suitors throughout her long life. Zed was forced to clarify himself.
Therefore, Mistress Firkin, I prefer you call me Reuben.
She stared blankly, and then, as he saw in her dark brown eyes realizations making connections, a sudden giggle burst forth to echo through the long room. A few people down at other tables glanced up. He noticed the eyes of one of the guards turn their way. Mistress Firkin put the back of her hand to her grin as her face went scarlet.
Reuben!
She giggled again with the mischievousness of using his first name. She glanced around before leaning toward him.
Vedetta. Ah, Zed cooed. Vedetta. What a lovely name.
She tittered as she scurried off, her shuffling steps echoing softly through the huge room, the lower of two floors of the elegant Andereth Library. From his place at a table, Zed had long since watched through the windows as the sun set. The array of lamps lit with a warm glow the honey-colored oak of the room and provided illumination for those still more interested in devouring words than dinner. Zed dragged the heavy volume Vedetta Firkin had found in front of himself. A quick glance told him it was of no value. He opened it anyway so as to appear he was reading it with earnest interest. He was not. The book he was really reading was to the upper right, but even with his head lowered, he could still turn his eyes up to the right and read the other, and any nosy person wandering past would be fooled. There were a few such people about. He had already created a sensation with his grand entrance when he stood at the head of the library and made sweeping proclamations of having a hypothesis of law involving the accountability of secondary suppliers of goods to the signatories in trade agreements nullified by clauses involving acts of creation not specifically specified in the subtext but implied by common law of ancient trading principles, and he knew he would be able to prove them out with the fine examples of rational law set forth in the examples found in the history of Andereth law. No one had been bold enough to dispute his claims. Everyone in the library was perfectly happy to let him do his research. It helped to have Franca escorting him, since she was known in the library. It was late, and the people running the library wanted to go home, but they feared incurring the wrath of anyone having such extraordinary command of law. Because he lingered, a few others did too. Zed didn't know if it was to take advantage of the extra time the library was open, or to keep him under observation. Franca sat across the table, but down a ways, to provide room for all the books spread out in front of the two of them. She pored through books and occasionally brought to his attention items she thought he might need to see. Franca was smart and pointed out things few others would grasp, things that could conceivably be significant, but so far he had seen nothing of any practical use. He wasn't sure exactly what it was he was searching for, but he was sure he hadn't seen it yet. Deep in concentration, Zed started when someone touched his shoulder.
Sorry,
Vedetta whispered. Zed smiled at the shy lady.
Quite all right, my dear Vedetta.
He lifted his eyebrows in question.
Oh,
she reached into the pocket of her apron. She turned red again as her hand fished around. The hand paused.
Found it? Found what?
Zed whispered. She leaned closer, lowered her voice yet more. Zed noticed Franca watching from across the table as her head was bowed to a book.
We aren't supposed to let just anyone see this. It's very precious and rare.
Her face flushed red again.
But you are a special man, Reuben, so brilliant and all, that I brought it out of the vault for you to see for just a minute. Really, Vedetta? How extraordinarily kind of you. What is it, then?
I don't rightly know exactly, but it belonged to Joseph Ander himself.
Really? Zed drawled.
She nodded in earnest.
The mountain? What? The mountain? That's what some of that time called him. When I don't have anything to do, I sometimes read the ancient texts of the time to learn more about our revered ancestor Joseph Ander. Back then, as I gather, some called him the mountain.
Zed was at full attention as he watched her draw the hand from her apron. She had something small. His heart sank because he thought it too small to be a book. But then his heart felt as if it skipped a beat when he saw it was indeed a small black book, a journey book. It even had the stylus still in the spine. Zed wet his lips as she held it out in both hands before him. Zed put a finger to his lower lip. She had no intention of letting such a valuable piece out of her possession, even if he was a fancy scholar. Over near the vault door, two armed guards scanned the patrons, but paid Zed no particular attention.
"May I see inside, Vedetta?"
he asked in a strained whisper.
Well, I guess it can't hurt.
The woman carefully opened the cover. The journey book was in pristine condition, but then the one Anne had carried was just as old and in just such good condition. Journey books were things possessed of magic, so that probably explained their being nearly as good as new despite their thousands of years of use. That, and the care with which the sisters handled the valuable books. The people here used no less care. Zed froze in mid-breath. Mountain. He understood. Mountain's twin was the mate to this journey book. It all fell into place in his head. Mountain's twin had been destroyed, and along with it, possibly the disposition of the chimes. But this book, Joseph Ander's journey book, would have the same words, if they hadn't been wiped away with a stylus. He watched, spellbound, as Vedetta Firkin turned the first blank page over. A 3,000-year-dead wizard was about to speak to him. Zed stared at the words there on the next page. He stared as hard as he could. They made no sense. A spell, he feared, to keep anyone from reading it. No, that wasn't it. Besides, magic had failed. Such a spell wouldn't still work. As he studied the writing, he realized it was a language he didn't know. Then it came to him. It was in High Dahoran. Zed's heart sank. Virtually no one knew High Dahoran anymore. Richard had told him he'd learned it. Zed didn't doubt him, but Richard was off on his way to Adendrill. Zed would never be able to find, much less catch him. Besides, the people in the library were not going to let him take this book, and Zed had no magic to do anything about it.
What a glorious thing to see,
Zed whispered, as he watched the woman slowly turn the pages before his eyes.
Yes, isn't it? She said with deep reverence. I sometimes go in the vault and just sit and look at the thing written by Joseph Ander and imagine his fingers turning the pages. It gives me shivers, she confided. Me too, Zed said.
She seemed pleased to hear it.
It's too bad no one has ever been able to translate it. We don't even know what language it might be. Some of our scholars here suspect it to be an ancient code used by wizards. Joseph Ander was a wizard, she confided in a hushed tone. Not everyone knows it, but he was. He was such a great man.
Zed wondered how they could possibly know he was great if they had no idea what he said. But then he realized that was precisely why they thought he was so great.
A wizard, Zed repeated. One would think a wizard would want his words known.
Vedetta giggled.
Oh, you don't know anything about wizards, Reuben. They're like that, mysterious and all.
I suppose, he said absently, as he tried to pick out a word he might possibly make sense of as they flipped past his eyes. None did.
Except,
Vedetta confided in a very low whisper as her eyes shifted to each side for a quick look.
This here.
She tapped a page very near the end.
These words here I managed, by an accident of coincidence, to decipher. Just these two.
You did, Zed squinted at the words.
Fuer Albans.
He looked up into her excited eyes.
Vedetta, do you really know what Fuer Albans means, or do you just think you might?
She frowned with seriousness.
I really know. I quite by chance came across a place in another book called Tinder Dominion, where it mentions the same words and uses both versions. It was about some...
So you deciphered the words. What do they mean?
She put her mouth close to his ear.
The ovens.
Zed turned his head and looked into her dark eyes.
The ovens?
She nodded.
The ovens?
He frowned.
Any idea what that means?
Vedetta snapped closed the little black journey book.
Sorry, but I don't.
She straightened.
It's getting late, Reuben. The guards said that after I showed you this, they want to close the library.
Zed didn't try to hide his disappointment.
Of course. Everyone will want to go home and get some dinner and sleep. But you can come back tomorrow, Reuben. I'd love to help you some more tomorrow.
Zed was stroking his lip as his mind raced, going over every scrap of information he had learned and trying to think if any of it would be of any use at all. It didn't seem so.
What?
He looked up at her.
What was that? I said, I hope you will come back tomorrow. I'd love to help you again.
She smiled in her shy way.
You're more of a challenge than most who come in here. Few people care to research such ancient books as you do. I think that's a shame. People nowadays don't respect the knowledge of the past.
No, they don't, he said in all seriousness.
I'd love to return tomorrow, Vedetta.
Her face went red again.
Perhaps, if you'd like, you could come back to my apartment and I could fix you something to eat.
Zed smiled.
I would love that, Vedetta, and you truly are a kind lady, but it wouldn't be possible. I'm with Franca. She's my hostess, and we must get back to Fairfield and discuss all our research. My project, you know, the law.
Her wrinkles sagged.
I understand. Well, I hope to see you tomorrow.
Zed caught her sleeve as she started to turn away.
Vedetta, perhaps tomorrow I could take you up on your offer? If it would be open for tomorrow, that is.
Her beaming smile reappeared.
Why, yes. Tomorrow would be better, actually. I would have a chance to... Well, tomorrow would be fine. My daughter will be gone tomorrow evening, I'm sure, and we could have a lovely dinner, just the two of us. My husband died 6 years ago, she added as she fussed with her collar. A fine man. I'm sure he was.
Zed stood and bowed deeply.
Tomorrow it is, then.
He held up a finger.
And thank you for showing me the special book from the vault. I was most honored.
She turned and started off, taking a big smile with her.
Good night, Reuben.
He waggled his fingers in a wave while giving her a wide grin. As soon as he saw her vanish into the vault, Zed turned and gestured to Franca.
Let's go.
Franca closed her books and came around the table. Zed offered his arm as they ascended the grand staircase together. The oak railing, nearly a foot across and sculpted in an exquisite profile, reflected the points of lamplight from the lamps flanking the stairwell.
Any luck?
She whispered when they were out of earshot of the others. Zed checked over his shoulder to make sure none of the people who had shown interest in the two of them were closing in behind. There were at least three people Zed found suspicious, but they were too far back cleaning up their papers and putting away books to hear, unless they were gifted. Since magic didn't work, he didn't need fear that. A small convenience of magic's failure.
No,
Zed said with resignation.
I didn't see anything of any use at all. What was that little book she brought out of the vaults, the one she wouldn't let you hold?
Zed waved a hand.
Nothing of any use. It was in Hyde Dahoran.
He looked over out of the corner of his eye.
Unless you know Hyde Dahoran. No, I've only seen it a couple of times in my life.
Zed sighed.
The woman knew the meaning of only two words out of the entire book. The ovens.
Franca halted on the stairs. They were near the top.
The ovens?
Zed frowned.
You know what that means?
Franca nodded.
It's a place. Not many people but the gifted would know it. My mother took me there once. What is it? What kind of place?
Franca squinted off into her memories.
Well, it's an abnormally hot place. A cave. You can feel the power, the magic in that hot cave, but there's nothing there. I don't understand.
Franca shrugged.
Neither do I. There's nothing there, but it's a strange place that only the gifted would appreciate.
It just gives you a kind of, I don't know, kind of a thrill of power running through you just to stand in there in the ovens. But those without the gift can't feel anything. She checked the others to make sure they weren't listening.
It's a place we don't tell people about. A secret place, just for the gifted. Since we don't know what's in there, we keep it secret.
I need to go see this place. Can we go now?
It's way up in the mountains, several days away. If you want, we can leave in the morning. Zed thought it over.
No, I think I would prefer to go alone.
Franca seemed hurt, but if it was what he thought it might be, he didn't want her anywhere near it. Besides, he didn't really know this woman, and he wasn't sure he could trust her.
Look, Franca, it could be dangerous, and I'd never forgive myself if anything happened to you. You've already given me selflessly of your time and trouble, and risked enough.